Hi, just before you listen to your 3CR podcast, a quick message. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. By becoming a regular donor, you can help us stay resilient and radical. Will you help 3CR by becoming a regular donor today? Together, we can keep independent voices on air. Go to 3cr.org.au. Thanks for listening and enjoy your podcast.
Welcome to Yeah Nah Passeran, a show about fascism and its gravediggers, whose podcast could be uploaded with a little bit more consistency and a little bit more regularity. So we have declared upload bankruptcy and we're putting them all up. We recently did do three shows in reasonably quick succession that were all about essentially the same topic, which is coping and seething. We spoke to Kaz Ross in early August about a Nazi march in Melbourne. Then in late August, we spoke amongst ourselves about a different Nazi march in Melbourne, and then with Celeste Little a week later about that same Nazi march. Too many Nazi marches in Melbourne, but we will discuss them all in this episode. So, air quotes, enjoy.
But you also had people that were very fine people.
Very fine people on both sides.
And the aliens with mind meld and give them the technology. They're bad aliens.
So
are you surprised the Nazis were influenced by demons?
No, if demons are real, I would definitely think they'd be on the side of the Nazis.
Yeah.
McDonald's is connected to the Clintons. They chop up the bodies and put them into the sausage and hamburgers. People are being cannibalized. Look it up.
And I'm watching CNN talk about this as violent white nationalist protests. We have done everything in our power to keep this peaceful, you know?
It's Pepe's become kind of a symbol.
You're listening to Yeah Nah Passeran, a show about fascism and its gravediggers. I'm Cam Smith.
I'm Andy Fleming.
And this week we are joined by Dr. Kaz Ross, an academic whose special mastermind subjects are Steve Bannon and the Australian far right. Dr. Kaz, thanks for joining us.
Hello, Cam, and hello, Andy.
Just to begin with, we saw some brouhaha in Melbourne over the weekend as Nazis marched through our streets. They did do it at 1 a.m, so perhaps it might be a little early to say that the streets belong to the Nazis. They have a little way to go before they can claim that they don't always lose in Melbourne.
Yeah. So, yes, this seems to be a new trend of theirs. It's kind of NSN now seems to stand for National Socialist Nocturnal Division. They seem to be adopting this new approach of turning up to do a very bold protest in the middle of the night. We saw them a while ago at North Lane Shopping Centre in the northern suburbs of Melbourne, turning up after 3 a.m. Very bravely they were. And this time they turned up somewhat after midnight, marched around for about 40 minutes in the city with a very nice police escort, and then dispersed into the night. So, yes, whose streets? Our streets. Try doing it during the day. I think that they would have a bit of resistance. At least I would hope so. My comment really is that it's a very disappointing action from them. We saw them marching on Invasion Day in January in Adelaide. They had a drum, they had cymbals, they were singing, they were marching all out of step, out of time. And sadly, I have to report half a year onwards, their marching is still dismal. So very disappointed in the military discipline and training of the National Socialist Nocturnal Division. Their marching was quite bad. Their singing was pretty bad as well. They did stick together and they had their tactic of lots of people taking photographs and filming and so on and so forth. So presumably we're about to be subjected to a barrage of propaganda videos of scary men dressed all in black with their faces covered marching around the night streets of Melbourne.
Kaz, who consumes this stuff?
Oh, well, I do. That's one thing. They've said that I'm one of their most devoted followers. So, yeah, I watch it. I think that we don't always see this, but they're reaching a global audience. So we often think that they're just focusing on recruiting and changing people's minds in Australia, but they do actually produce content on the global fascist stage, and other fascist groups and national socialist groups online share their material. It's all building up their reputation. I think another audience for their content is actually state government. And we see the state government of Victoria has responded and using this march of the neo-Nazis in the middle of the night to push forward their draconian restrictions on protesting and demonstrating in Melbourne. So that's another audience of their content. Some of the journalists around the place love their content, and we've seen today actually that some of the reports on right-wing activity, they just reproduce the propaganda materials from the National Socialist Network. Also, I think that they themselves consume their own material in somewhat of a masturbatory kind of style. So, yeah, I mean, you know, they're against degeneracy. Maybe their sort of pawn of choice is watching themselves march around the place. I'm not really sure, but certainly creating the propaganda is a big part of why they do these stunts. I think that particular march, one of the roles of it, I mean, it was the start of a three-day national meetup for them. So this was a sort of a male bonding exercise. They got a big thrill. They snuck past the police that were monitoring their camp where they were all staying. They snuck past the police, snuck into Melbourne, did this, you know, fantastic marching around the place. So, you know, they were on a bit of a high afterwards, and it's a bit of a group bonding exercise, I guess.
Do you understand why the police didn't disrupt their marching on the Friday evening?
Look, this is a really good question. We've seen where they've marched in Adelaide, when they've marched in Sydney, and when they've marched in Brisbane, the police have been very prepared to disrupt their actions, to divert them away from their targets and to disperse them. In the case of Victorian police, they are extremely reluctant to disperse them. They tend to just shepherd them around and guide them around the place. I understand that, you know, you've got 130 people marching around at 1 o'clock in the morning. You may not have the full force of VicPol there at your command to immediately pop into action. But the police knew that this action was coming. They knew that they were going to be gathering, that this was a national gathering, their annual weightlifting competition. They knew where it was. They were monitoring the venue out in rural Victoria. So my question would be, they're all stuck on a property in rural Victoria. They have to get from that property 45 minutes outside of Melbourne into Melbourne. So there was plenty of opportunity for the police to form a barricade at the entrance of the property and then say, right, if you leave the property, you're not coming back. So that's my question. I've heard a number of conspiracies about this where various people on the left have been talking to me, their conspiracy theories that the government allowed them to march around the city so that then the government could bring in its anti-protest laws. I think that's far-fetched. But I am surprised that the police, knowing where they were, knowing where they were camped, one entrance in and out could have easily blocked it and stopped them from going into town. I'm not sure why they did that. I can understand that of these 130 men that are marching around, they really want to get into fights. When they've encountered resistance, when they've encountered protesters, you know, their fists are balled. They want to get into fights. They're looking for fights, actually. Some of them particularly excited about the possibility of getting to a physical altercation. I mean, we have to keep in mind that their whole strategy is the active club strategy is tribe and train. So tribe, form your group, train for what? So we know that they're meeting and working out two or three times a week, doing kickboxing and running and weightlifting and getting fit, practicing their fighting. So what are they going to be fighting? We know that at the camp where they were based, they were picking up supporters in a nearby town who were coming in by train. And when they heard that there was going to be the possibility of locals of that town forming their own little local community protests and say, we don't want racists and Nazis in our town, we know that they sent some very heavy guys to that spot, and they were, you know, looking for trouble basically. If anybody had tried to stand up to them physically, I think they would have got bashed. So I think that, you know, this is a concern that you've got 130 men that are training for some kind of fighting action. That's pretty daunting, I think, for you know, 10 police cars of police, but I don't know why the police went more onto it in advance. They must have known what was going on. So I cannot answer your question, Andy.
The other thing I was going to ask you about, and you've already answered this in many respects, is the response on the part of the government, media and others. These things happen. There's always outrage being expressed. How dare they? Nazism is bad and so on. But I think you've also noted that as it currently stands, the NSN has undergone some considerable growth since it was established. And if these tactics and strategies that they're deploying are working, presumably on that basis, all things being equal, they'll continue to grow. And I don't suppose anyone looks forward to the prospect of many hundreds of uniformed Nazis jackbooting through Melbourne or anywhere else.
Yes, except for Thomas Sowell and the leadership, because that's certainly their aim, to get many hundreds of jackbooted Nazis marching through the streets. You'll be aware that they are trying to launch a political party called White Australia, and they've launched, you know, a website, and they're on a membership drive. They need 1,500 people on the electoral roll as members before they can register as a political party. Today, they were saying that the traffic to their website is such that they, and the number of people that are signing on as supporters and wanting to be members, means that they believe that they are on track to surpass the Liberal Party in terms of membership numbers. I don't know if that's fantasy or where they're at. I mean, we have to keep in mind that although it seems ludicrous and ridiculous to us, the leadership of this group believe that they will take political control of Australia. They will be the government in their minds. They're very serious about that, although it sounds absolutely ridiculous, but they are extremely serious about that. And I guess for their, you know, from their perspective, if they've had a huge increase in members and people showing interest in their group, then the weekend was a big success for them.
They did also get a little bit of pushback from an unexpected quarter the other day. Could you tell us a little bit about what happened when they showed up to the anti-Islam protest, which happened in Melbourne?
This year is the 10th anniversary of the forming of Reclaim Australia. And I'm sure you've talked about it before on this show, and both of you are quite an expert on this topic. But Reclaim Australia formed 10 years ago, and of course that formed as a anti-Muslim movement, supposedly of mums and dads. It was quite large, and then it got taken over by Nazis, and then as these things go, it sort of fell apart for various reasons. So it's interesting that 10 years on, there was this big anti-Muslim push. So what happened was, a couple of weeks ago, the annual Ashura Shia Muslim March happened in Melbourne, which is where Shia Muslims march through the city. It's a designated route. They walk down to, you know, towards Parliament in Melbourne. They do it every year. It's all arranged, the route's all arranged and what have you. But because they were stuck at one spot waiting for the tail end of the march to catch up, it's quite large, they were stopped outside of St. Patrick's Cathedral, the Catholic Cathedral in Melbourne. Some people going past filmed it, and it started to circulate amongst the dregs of the freedom movement and others on the right wing, as Muslims surrounded the Christian cathedral and they were chanting towards it. In actual fact, they were just stopped there and they were doing their prayers where they were stopped while they were waiting for the back of the march to catch up. So this caused a lot of consternation. It was very much whipped up around the dregs of the freedom movement. And it's interesting that even a news source such as news.com debunked it. They went and looked at the whole video of the entire march. They went and talked to the St. Patrick's Cathedral people. They talked to the Archbishop and so on and so forth. And he said, no, it wasn't like that at all. It wasn't a problem. But no, you can't put the freedom movement off when it gets an idea in its head. And so the idea was, this was Muslims attacking Christianity. How very dare they? We need to have a resistance. So Nick Patterson, who was a fighter, an MMA fighter, who had a gym in Melbourne, during COVID, he came to fame because he refused to close his gym when there were lockdowns because of COVID. And so he got into some fights with the police. He said the police, you know, were violent towards him. He did end up with a dislocated shoulder at one point, and so on and so forth. So he's quite the well-known figure. He's, during the COVID era, he also created a freedom fighters group, and the idea was that these men who were all trained fighters would go and protect the freedom movement from police harassment. So he's a known figure. He's also an evangelical Christian minister. And so he took it upon himself to organise a rally in Melbourne. And the initial plan was to all the good Christian anti-Muslim folk would meet in the park. They would then do a march. They would march to a mosque and they would surround the mosque and start praying and that kind of thing. But they changed their minds. I'm not sure whether it was the police that changed their minds or whether the fact that they only had about 100 people turn up changed their minds. But in any case, they decided not to march. So they had a stage and they had speakers and they had some lovely Christian evangelical songs and so on and so forth. Now, things got interesting because a young man who is African turned up and he was wearing a Kanye West T-shirt with some Hitler references and a Sonnenrad on the T-shirt. And he caused quite a lot of consternation. He went up to Avi Yemeni, who was there reporting from Rebel News, caused a bit of a fuss. Avi Yemeni got Nick Patterson to remove the young person from the rally. And in the process, the young person mentioned that he was a supporter of Hitler and that he was a supporter of Joel Davis, who is a National Socialist Network member. So Avi Yemeni then said to Nick Patterson, well, you know, there's Joel Davis over there and he's over there with his National Socialist Network mates. And Nick Patterson said, right, that's it. You've all got to get out. So Joel was absolutely incensed. He said, I'm just standing here listening. I think at that time there was some, you know, Christ in the Kingdom of the Lord type evangelical songs going on the stage. And Joel Davis was very shocked. He was booted. A number of the, well, all the other Nazis were booted, including some Nazis who got into a bit of fisticuffs with Avi Yemeni and his bodyguard. So as a result, Joel Davis was outraged and said, this was taken over by Zionists. Why was Avi Yemeni there? Plus a group in Melbourne called the Lions of Zion, who are Zionists, ex-IDF members, and they act as sort of, you know, soldiers for the Zionist movement. They have a propensity to be a bit pushy. And in this case, they were like the bodyguards at that protest. So Joel Davis was evicted. All the Nazis were evicted. They didn't turn up in black block. They were just dressed in normal clothes. And Joel Davis said, well, you know, why is it that we can't have an anti-Muslim movement without it being taken over by Jews and Zionists? So that's kind of interesting because that was a few weeks ago. And now, of course, we're in the middle of this planned action on August 31, which is a push against mass migration in Australia, the idea that there'll be a march in all the capital cities, stand up for Australia, fight back against mass migration. And a lot of the material that's circulating around that has been drawing on Reclaim Australia photographs. And seems to be very Islamophobic. So it seems to me this is an attempt to create either Cronulla 2.0, Reclaim Australia 2.0, but I think for the neo-Nazis, this is an attempt to provide a platform to launch their White Australia Party.
Kaz, obviously Marching for Australia means different things to different people and will be interpreted as such. Thinking of Cronulla and Reclaim, where do you think things stand at the moment in terms of the political composition of the forces that might be attracted to such an event?
I think you've put your finger right on it there, Andy. To say it's time to stand up for Australia, it's time to take our country back, we need to tell the government what we think, that could be anything. Like you could be against digital ID, you could be against the anti-masking laws that are coming in. You could be an anti-vaxxer. And when I've had a look around at the remains of the freedom movement, I see that people are on the one hand saying, oh, it's time to be proud of Australia and tell the government what we think. But the organisers themselves have made it pretty clear this is an anti-mass immigration push. And when you have a look around, nobody's really saying that they are the organiser, which makes it really difficult, so it's unclear. But they've been forced in the last few days to clarify exactly what the whole thing's about. And they have said, look, you can't bring any other flags. Aboriginal flags are not welcome. This is not about Aborigines. This is about ending mass migration. So the interesting thing is a number of people who actually have migrant backgrounds have said, well, can we come and can we wave Australian flags as well? And the answer has sort of been from these anonymous organisers, yes, yes, as long as you support the ending of mass migration. Now, when you have a bit of a look around at who could be running this and what their ideas are, basically for them, Stand Up for Australia means fight back against the great replacement of white people by migrants. So for them, they're not saying end mass migration and have targeted migration. They're saying end all migration. And so in which case them saying, oh, well, if you're a migrant, that's fine to come along as long as you support Australia, that's disingenuous. So I have no doubt that this sort of fascist part of the freedom movement is very much focused on white supremacy, the great replacement theory, and basically saying we need to end all migration, not just mass migration. And it's pretty clear that actually that group of people are pushing for what's called re-migration, which is a euphemism for genocide, basically. This is the idea that anybody that's not Anglo-Saxon or Celtic should be thrown out of the country. Doesn't matter how many generations your family have been here, if you're Asian or black, you need to get out. And some of the neo-Nazis have actually spoken about how Aborigines need to be re-migrated out of Australia. Don't know where they would be re-migrated to, given they've been here for 60 to 80,000 years. So it's pretty clear that it's a very fascist type part of the freedom movement that's very focused on white supremacy, where the true Aussies are the people who are white and of Anglo-Celtic or Saxon background, but they're not saying it directly. So they're trying to make it anybody can come along and wave an Aussie flag as long as you want to end mass migration. Of course, a number of different groups have leapt onto it for their own purposes, such as the neo-Nazis. I don't know if they were involved in originally organising it. People who are close to the anonymous organisers have said, oh, of course National Socialist Network are welcome because they're all white men, they're all Australians. Well, of course, we know Thomas Sewell himself is a New Zealander. But they also, part of this re-migration is the idea that we see this, you know, Trump's working on this in the United States, which is foreign criminals need to be deported. So I'll just make the observation, of course, that Thomas Sewell, New Zealander, has a criminal record. So, you know, I'm just thinking that he could be in line for re-migration actually under this same policy that he's actually pushing. So I think the idea of the organisers is to make it look like it's a big Australia flag fest. But even that's fallen into some controversy because, of course, much of the freedom movement, particularly the sovereign citizen part of it, don't actually believe in the blue Australian flag. They think that's the corporate flag and that people should fly the true flag of Australia, which is the red ensign. So there's already been a controversy about which is the true Australian flag. There's been a controversy about no Aboriginal flags. And I think that because it means, you know, Stand Up for Australia could mean anything to anybody. But once they've made it pretty clear that this is against mass migration, yeah, maybe some people will see that actually this is all geared towards that idea of the replacement of white people, the great replacement theory, which, as we know, is a white supremacist idea.
I can't even with this blue Australian flag. You might as well print out the Australian government's American ABN and fly that. It's just outrageous.
Yeah, that's right. It's the corporation. You know, you're supporting the corporation.
Kaz, finally, we can't have you on the radio without getting an update on what's going on in Steve Bannon's world. I noticed it was being floated in Fox News and thereabouts that we might see Steve Bannon run for president in 2028, which Steve very worryingly said, no, Trump 2028. What's going on with Steve?
Well, as we know, Steve Bannon is very loyal to Donald Trump. Donald Trump and his campaign is somewhat of a Bannon creation. We know that he was a mastermind behind the first election campaign of Trump. We know that he was also the mastermind behind the stolen election myth. That was something that he pushed extremely heavily. In recent stoushes that Trump's had with various people such as Elon Musk, Steve Bannon has come down very clearly on the side of Trump. In fact, he called Elon Musk a parasitic illegal immigrant and said that he should be deported. So Steve Bannon has made it clear that he's Trump all the way, and his answer to that is no, no, Trump 2028. So I think it would be extremely unlikely for him to want to run for president. I think he's much more of a strategic operator. Whether or not he's a supporter of J.D. Vance, I don't know, because it's been said that privately he thinks that J.D. Vance is no good. And as we know, Bannon isn't a supporter of Peter Thiel, who's the backer behind J.D. Vance. So I don't really know. But I think what's interesting is that some people are calling Bannon the big daddy for the Korean people. So something that's a bit surprising, but there's a Make Korea Great Again movement, Take Korea Back movement, a sort of a Korean MAGA movement in Korea. And Steve Bannon's been pushing that very heavily and supporting that very heavily. And he's been described by the leader of the Build Up Korea movement as the big daddy for the Korean people. You might wonder what they're actually taking Korea back from. And this is all about the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party. So this is all about setting up a big conference that's going on next month in Korea, a Turning Point USA style conference with those sorts of figures such as Charlie Kirk and Jack Posobiec are going to be at this conference in September. There's supposed to be about 5,000 young Koreans there. Steve Bannon isn't going to Korea, I might point out. He's not on the bill. But the idea is that it needs to be a Christian, conservative, pro-American movement to influence Korean politics. And for anybody that follows Korean politics, you would know that the president was arrested, was impeached and arrested for attempted insurrection at the end of last year. So that was on the conservative side, they were saying that's like their equivalent of Donald Trump. So, yeah, so Steve Bannon's very much hard at work still combating the CCP. And I think that, well, as we've discussed before, you know, he gets funding from the anti-CCP forces. So this is still something that he's promoting very heavily, that Korea needs to stand up to any influence from China. He's also still promoting the pillow guy, you know, Mike Lindell, the pillow guy. He's still promoting him as well. So, you know, if you want to see what Mike Lindell, the pillow guy, is up to, you can pop over to Steve Bannon's social media and check that out as well.
I do understand that about half of Korea's living ex-presidents are currently in jail, so maybe everyone else should be aiming to be a bit more like Korea rather than Korea being more like the US.
Yeah, well, it seems to be something that happens quite a bit over there, but I think that, you know, we also have to keep in mind that this president, when he tried this insurrection, you know, announcing martial law and so on, he still had, you know, 40% of the population behind him. So, look, I don't know the ins and outs of South Korean politics. It's not my specialty. But I'm interested that, you know, the whole pro-MAGA movement is being promoted there.
We'll have to leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us. If people want to find you, you're on Blue Sky, you're on Twitter.
I am actually on Twitter. I'm one of the last holdouts on Twitter. I know it's a nasty, nasty Nazi fest over there, but I'm holding out at the moment before going to the blue space.
They can find you at Tazzy Kaz on Twitter. All right, well, that's it. Andy, that's our show. We'll see you next week.
Yes, we'll see you then. Thanks. Bye.
Keffiyehs are Palestinian scarves, and they're a symbol of support for justice for the Palestinian people. From the traditional black and white kaffiyeh to an array of modern designs. Explore the range and order online or drop by 3CR during business hours. We're your support for the rights of Palestinians. Go to kufiyas.org.au. That's kufiyas.org.au. A 3CR supporter.
Help 3CR raise funds by donating your containers. Every eligible drink container that you return to a Container Deposit Scheme recycling point earns 10 cents, which can really add up. 3CR is a donation partner for Victoria's Container Deposit Scheme. The scheme allows you to recycle selected aluminium, glass, or plastic containers and donate the funds earned to a not-for-profit organisation of your choice. Help us raise funds for the station. Search for Community Radio and choose 3CR next time you cash in your cans. Go to cdsvic.org.au for more information.
Welcome to Yeah Nah Passaran, a show about fascism and its gravediggers. I'm Cam Smith.
I'm Andy Fleming.
Coming in hot, Andy. Bit of energy. There's no guest that we need to behave for.
No, we can just, you know, talk off the top of our heads, Cam.
Andy, we're just going to have a little bit of a chat about what's going on. Did you think, you know, there's a bit going on in our city of Melbourne. We're an anti-fascist radio program. In Melbourne, maybe we should talk about it.
Probably, yeah.
Did you have a good march for Australia? Did you take your country back, mate?
Yes and no, Cam. I did have a chance to witness, as did others, a march by several thousand people waving flags and angry about migrants.
Didn't it warm the cockles of your heart to see people so proud of their beautiful nation, this sunburnt country?
Yeah, no, not really. I think there was a kind of air of, well, for celebration for some, but I'd say menace on the other hand, and I think it was embodied later on, well, during the course of the day and then later in the afternoon and since probably, pretty nasty stuff.
Yeah, typical loony lefty. You can't have a little pogrom. Yeah. Oh, one little pogrom and suddenly the whole thing.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, it did bring me back about 10 years ago to the days of Reclaim, but I do think there were some significant, politically significant differences between 2025 and 2015.
Well, this is what I wanted to ask you about first, Andrew, because you are a student of history. How did you feel that, you know, what we witnessed over the weekend, how did it compare to the Reclaim Australia movement that we saw pop up in 2015, which you've, you know, studied and written about extensively?
Well, I guess Reclaim, certainly in Melbourne or NAM, was smaller in 2015. And the other significant difference, I think, was whereas then the target was Muslims, this time around it was migrants. But unlike 2015, the leadership of the event was explicitly and openly neo-Nazi, and the group responsible both promoted and participated in the organisation of the event here and elsewhere, but also led the procession that made its way through the city. And, of course, its Führer got to speak on the steps of the Victorian Parliament to what seemed to be general applause and acclamation, which, again, I think the anti-fascist interventions in 2015 were more successful in terms of interrupting those sorts of spectacles. This time around, that was not the case, partly a function of the fact that there were literally thousands of people I describe as flagwits assembling behind the Nazis and happy to do so. Of course, there's been some fallout from that since, and I imagine there'll continue to be as some of the people involved possibly have some second thoughts about the fact that they're following Nazis.
Yeah, although, I mean, in the last few days, I haven't really seen that playing out too much. There's not too many regrets playing out. I've seen the word hijacked thrown around a little bit. What do you make about the rally being hijacked by extremist elements?
I'd say that's utter nonsense. I'd say that there's a good deal of political ground, and what the Nazis were able to do was identify that political ground, which is hostility to migrants, racism and xenophobia, and express it in a way that was palatable to those who'd assembled. And part of the effort is to simply, you know, I don't think it was the case, and I think it was sensible of the Führer not to identify those he blames for both the situation of migrants in Australia, but also all the world's ills. So in that sense, I think it was, you know, smart politics. It's not, and the crowd that assembled was already primed to receive that message. And certainly if you examine media coverage, not only in the recent past, but over a very long period of time, the attacks upon migrants and so-called ethnic communities is almost incessant. And it's cultivated and will continue to be cultivated by major media organisations and political parties. I think the thing that's been confronted by some of them is, and when I say there's perhaps some reassessment, I think that's internal. Publicly, of course, there's no regrets, rah, 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 I love Australia, the usual stuff. I mean, the whole purpose of that kind of rhetoric and that ideology is to terminate and make impossible any kind of critical scrutiny of what's going on or even the basic facts surrounding migration or housing or education or anything else. I mean, that's, I think in that context, it's important for people understand that the appeal of fascist rhetoric isn't its intellectual content, it's emotional appeal. It's the way in which it appeals to people's feelings. And if people are angry and looking for a target, the Nazis are able to intervene quite easily and provide it to people, along with leadership and direction. I mean, that's what the Nazis had. They're an organized group of people who are able to enter into these movements and these events and steer them in the direction that they want to go, partly on the basis that they are organized, but partly on the basis that the message that they're putting out is to a very receptive audience.
Andy, we had a question from a listener. They wanted to know what we made of the fact that Albo made a very fine people-esque comment about the rallies on the weekend. You know, there were some good people that went along to these things, but they've been, you know, misled by these Nazis. As they noted, there's not a lot of political ground to be won by, like, these people are not going to come over to Labor. They, you know, these are people who want to hang Anthony Albanese.
Yeah.
So why did he feel the need to
pander? And Dan Andrews. Don't forget Dictator Dan Camp.
Yeah. Why the pandering, do you think?
Well, I think it's because, well, for several reasons. Probably because at the outset there were thousands of people marching. And, yes, it remains the case that for whatever reason the Prime Minister wants to appeal to a segment of that audience, which is he regards as being otherwise inclined to Labor. Because most of the people marching, I mean, we'll leave aside Hugo Lennon, who's from an extremely wealthy family and quite prominent in his anti-migrant rhetoric, but many others, are, you know, do fit the category of ordinary mums and dads, and they're angry and yada, yada, yada. But I think the other thing that's kind of less to do with the contemporary political situation, but historically, is fascist movements do appeal to the so-called ordinary man in the street. And in fact, it doesn't require any deep investment in Nazi ideology or any form of, you know, coherent ideology for people to be motivated to act. You know, that's always been the case. And it's no different in 2025. And I think that that's a fact that isn't really given due recognition. Yeah, lots of ordinary Germans supported the Nazis. Lots of ordinary Australians are capable of expressing support for fascism and do. How to address that is a long-term educational project. And in this instance, I'd say, you know, there have been some noises being made by various unions, but the union movement and the labour movement generally is absent from this space. And that's, you know, I think a more successful intervention is not to describe, you know, some of the blokes as being all right, but constructing real alternatives that are able to address the housing crisis and other matters in a way that's actually grounded in reality and based on expressions of union power and working class power.
Now, Andy, you may or may not agree with me on this, but I'm getting a little bit of sick of hearing Gillian Siegel, her constant going on about these rallies. No, I mean, we get it.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know. I think it's, you know, it could be read as a bit embarrassing, actually. Nazis freely marching on the streets of cities with popular or semi-popular support from thousands of others, not waving the swastika but waving the flag, should be, to anyone who takes anti-Semitism seriously, a matter of real concern. But that's not the case.
Truly a mystery. Hey, Andy, let's go to a song.
Okay.
Here is Big Nota, the new metal band from Briggs, with Identity. That was Big Nota there with Identity. You're listening to Yanar Passaran on 3CR, 8:55 a.m., 3cr.org.au and 3CR Digital on your DAB radio. We're currently talking about the March for Australia. Aussie, Aussie, Aussie. Sorry, I can't help myself. Andy, we were talking before about how many of the people that were leading the rallies on the weekend are the exact same people that were leading Reclaim 10 years ago. Tell us a little bit about the composition of this group.
Yeah, well, the group, which is to say the NSN only formed about 5 years ago, it emerged out of another group called the Lad Society, which in turn emerged out of something called the United Patriots Front. And that formed in 2015, early to mid-2015, as the kind of vanguard of Reclaim. And its first action was to attempt to protest against the presence of a socialist on Yarra Council. So from the beginning, and many of those involved in the UPF were Nazi, but in the closet. So they weren't being explicit or public about their political commitments. Those they kept disguised. Again, what's different is the Nazism now is, well, worn on their sleeves. And whereas I think there may have been an element back then among the Reclaimers that were slightly wary of, you know, being associated with Nazis, that's not the case in 2025. Instead, what's happened is that the denialism has doubled down. So many of those who participated either deny or simply, you know, make excuses for their role trailing after some Nazis. But certainly it was, you know, you can read the last 10 years, and I think that this is the case with the NSN and certainly Sewell as a political actor. He's been successful in the sense that he has, having abandoned any pretense of not being a Nazi, making that explicit, being able to build an organisation which has attracted the support of perhaps, and a membership of perhaps several hundred and maybe several thousand more within Australia who are sympathetic and supportive and who donate money and help promote the group, but also overseas. I mean, the kinds of stunts that were or have been undertaken over the last 10 years are for an international audience just as much as they are a national one. The group is recognised, actually, outside of Australia as being one of the leading extreme right organisations in the world. So lots of people online, lots of Nazis online and those sympathetic to Nazism thrill to these kinds of performances. And you could read the day as being a great success for the NSN. I mean, certain things have happened since the day that may suggest that it's not time to, you know,
pop the champagne just yet.
Champagne corks just yet. Because, of course, necessarily, I mean, it emanates both from their ideology and organisation that essentially, and their training. I mean, these young men are training to fight. They do it regularly. They have an active club structure, which, again, is both inspired by and inspires others overseas to engage in physical training for combat on the streets. You know, they had a win on the day, but perhaps got a little bit carried away subsequently. And certainly if you don't have thousands of flagwits behind you and you undertake certain actions, you're much more likely to get into trouble.
I have to say, performing for an international audience doesn't sound very patriotic to me. I personally would only ever perform for a national audience.
Yeah, well, you know. Yeah, but no, I mean, you know, the group has raised tens of thousands of dollars from local and overseas donors by way of Christian nationalist crowdfunder Gibson Go, which, of course, sponsored Warren Mundine's CFAC in 2023. I'll never tire of banging on that bloody drum.
I was going to set you up for it, and you just went and did it.
Yeah, no. I mean, I think, you know, maybe for people who are curious, it's a moment to reflect, and this is hardly an insight, but the relationships between the kinds of political expressions made on Sunday and the, you know, views of many of those in our parliaments, if they're not synonymous, they're near synonymous. So there's a constituency. And I think one of the things that the Nazis are attempting to do is undercut the appeal of, let's say, the Tories or other right-wing parties by simply being more vigorous in their expression of what is a sincerely held belief, which is non-whites have to go.
Yeah, I did notice that the banner that they made just said stop migration. That was the banner that everybody marched behind. It didn't say stop mass migration. It just said stop migration.
Yeah, I mean, you know, listeners don't have to be as gormless as a flagwit. You can read those things and know what they mean. And it's demonstrated in practice and in the, you know, racist political expressions and practices and policies of the Australian body politic writ large. I mean, you know, Australia has quite a history in this regard and, in fact, is somewhat notorious for it. And further, I mean, you know, there's that famous quote by Oswald Mosley upon visiting or commenting on the Australian political situation and how impressed he was back in the day, in the 1930s, about how Australia was remarkable in the fact, as he saw it, that it was able to spontaneously develop a form of fascism that was appropriate to British Empire. And, of course, that's about the celebration of colonial settlerism and white nationalism. I mean, those sentiments have deep roots, and both in the broader population but also our political and social institutions. And it's only just really begun to be addressed in some ways by some segments of the Australian political community.
Well, Andy, on that cheery bloody note, thanks for the pick-me-up.
Well, we should continue, Ken.
Let's go out on a song.
Why not? Yeah.
Here's Chaos Urbano with Anti-Fascismo. Yeah, we'll catch you next week, folks. See you later.
No passaran.
Kefirs are Palestinian scarves, and they're a symbol of support for justice for the Palestinian people. From the traditional black and white kefir to an array of modern designs, explore the range and order online or drop by 3CR during business hours. Wear your support for the rights of Palestinians. Go to kefirs.org.au. That's kefirs.org.au. A 3CR supporter.
Have you heard about the news that's come out of the NT?
What news? Fires, floods, chicken flu, what?
No, the payouts.
Payouts?
Compensation for what you went through.
No.
Well, I reckon you should go for it. You deserve every cent and more. I'll back you. You know it.
Oh, sis, you're the best.
Yes, I am.
If you are Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander and were removed from family or community in the Northern Territory before 1 July 1978 or in the ACT or Jervis Bay before 11th of May 1989, you may be eligible for the Territory Stolen Generations Redress Scheme. If you know of a family member who was removed but passed away after the scheme was announced on the 5th of August 2001, you may be eligible to apply for redress for them. Call Link Up Victoria, VACA, on 037 002 3700 and leave a message for a callback or contact the Territory Stolen Generations Redress Scheme on 1800 566 111.
A 3CR supporter.
Welcome to Yeah Nah Passaran, a show about fascism and its gravediggers. I'm Cam Smith.
I'm Andy Fleming.
And this week we are joined by Celeste Little, who is an Arenda journalist, feminist, and is the co-host of the Radical Online Leftist Pipeline podcast. Thanks for joining us, Celeste.
Thank you for having me.
I guess just to begin with, you recently attended the March for Australia. Did you get your Aussie, 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 oi, oi, oi on?
Look, I tried my damnedest, but I just don't have the spirit. My goodness. Yeah, no, I was there. I was obviously not on that side of the barricades, but it was a bit of a rough day, I've got to say.
Could you tell us a little bit about how the march looked from your perspective?
Yeah, so from my perspective, at the beginning, it looks like a conglomeration between anti-fascist actors and the Palestine rallies that have been ongoing every week and, you know, some other anti-racist groups that were marching down Swanston Street and effectively got blocked on the side of a police barricade with their mounted cops and the port team and everyone else that they decided to put on the day. On the other side of that were the March for Australia people. We could see them and we could hear them, but yeah, you know, it was just kind of everywhere you turned, there were the police barricades. And from there, our side of things seemed to splinter off a bit, you know, trying to oppose Nazis at different parts of the CBD. Yeah, it got a bit fragmented. So from there, what I actually saw was that neo-Nazis did get to march down Swanston and up Bourke Street and onto Parliament and do their speeches anyway, with police blocking everything else. So it was a bit of a scary day. It was a bit terrifying to see the sheer amount of numbers that they did get on their side.
Celeste, many people were, I guess, somewhat surprised at the numbers of people who were waving flags on the day. What do you think helps to explain that fact, and what significance do you think it has?
Like, there's not a short answer to that, I reckon, because there's a number of factors, I think, that led to those numbers, you know, that there was general ignorance on the other side of the barricade as to how much neo-Nazis were organising and all of that sort of stuff, because I think some people did front up just to show their frustration that Australia doesn't look like what they think it should look like, which is a white Australia policy sort of model of Australianism. Yeah, they can't escape this regardless of what individuals' intentions were for going to the march for Australia. People were attending an anti-immigration march, and they were attending it on the basis that cost of living's gone up, they're finding a hard time getting stable accommodations and jobs and whatever else. And people of colour who've come from across the world are very convenient people to blame, particularly when you look at Australian discourse over so many generations. But yeah, I think some did attend with that sort of mind and not understanding exactly where the source of their oppression and frustration really lay. But they can't escape that they attended a racist rally, and they also just cannot escape the fact that they marched with Nazis and cheered on Nazis and shook their hands and whatever else on the day. Like, that was ultimately the point that they made by attending. The numbers themselves, you know, and I had a look at the aerial photography, and I was also sent a video afterwards, because to me the numbers were huge, but they didn't look that much bigger than what the other side, which was the combined march and opposition I talked about before, they didn't look that much bigger than what we were, but they were a significant number. And it is a little bit terrifying that neo-Nazis are able or have been able to leverage their way into gaining this sort of support with these groups of people.
I feel like I've seen a lot of commentary in the sort of right-wing media space about them hijacking this, sort of hearkening back to the other protests that they apparently hijacked on the steps of Parliament a few years ago, where, you know, again, that was an anti-trans rally attacking a very marginalised community, mm-hmm. Which they came along in support of. But it was, I guess it was important that for some people that it was described as them hijacking it. And here again, we see an anti-immigration rally, you know, attacking non-white people again, they're described as hijacking. At least in this case, though, they organised the rally, essentially. It's, you know, the people that have come along and said, oh, this isn't about race, who have hijacked their racist rally.
Yeah, you can't actually hijack a rally that you've had a big hand in organising. And, you know, there's been a lot of people who've dug into those Telegram channels and the websites and everything else and actually plotted where the Nazi organising and involvement did take place. Like, you can't hijack something that you are intricately linked with mounting. It's impossible. But even then, you know, it is terrifying to me that a bunch of I don't know, everyday Australians, that's what they want to call themselves, would go along to a rally that is that racially based and will stand. Like, they do have to stop and look at why it is they're attending this stuff and why it is that they feel comfortable attending something that is so intricately linked with the National Socialist Network and their related actors.
Celeste, you've written about how the day was a loss for anti-fascists or for anti-fascism. Mm-hmm. What will constitute a win, in your view, on these sorts of occasions?
Well, for starters, yeah, at no point do I believe that the Nazis should have free run of the city. We should be opposing them. I think one of the biggest things that occurred to me on the day was that the big group of people that we had on the other side of the barricades ended up fragmented, and there were people that were victims of quite vicious attacks by little neo-Nazi grouplets and that had sort of split off in order to make alternate ways around the city or something to get to a next speaking spot. That fragmentation, yeah, it made us vulnerable. And one of the really basic things that I believe should have happened was that whole staunch, strong, you know, just standing together, you shall not pass attitude. It wasn't, I have seen some people claim that, you know, we were vastly outnumbered. As I've said, I don't necessarily agree with that being the case, looking at the photography and just walking through the crowd myself. I think that, you know, opposing and never giving these people the right to just take over our streets and take over our spaces, yeah, is pretty crucial. People do need to also get ready, though, for making sure that they are never comfortable, that they are actively opposed. Because the more comfortable they get and the more space that they've got to move through the city, the more emboldened they are going to become. And that's a real problem.
Celeste, before the March for Australia, you wrote a piece for Crikey about a little bit about the history of Nazis in Australia, which you took issue with Jacinta Allen's claim that Nazis don't belong in this country. Could you explain a little bit about why that statement grated?
I think that every single time I see a politician engaging in these, you know, sweeping statements of what they believe Australia is or isn't, they're engaging in a bit of historical revisionism, because there is a strong history of Nazis and fascist organising in this country. It goes back decades, and it's always had the space to do so because Australia itself has provided a space for them to do so. You know, whether it's support of the White Australia policy for several generations, or it's, you know, what people were and weren't taught when they went through the schooling system, or it's, you know, it's the fact that people still do believe that there's certain people who belong here and don't belong here, and they think that they can set the parameters of that. Like, Australia talks an awful lot about being a multicultural country, but I've also said before that I think that this is a country where people from many different cultures live, but it is insanely monocultural. At every turn, we're hit with the reinforcement of the English language and that the ideal Australian is a white person. People also do really conveniently forget that Australia itself was established on the legal fiction of terra nullius, land belonging to no one. So in order for Australia to exist, they actually wiped out several millennia's worth of history knowledge and peoples. And that's something that this country hasn't grappled with yet. So the racist foundations of this country and the fact that in every single institution, whether it's the constitution or it's the legal system or our parliament or whatever else, there's certain laws and that dictate the running of those things and have been grounded in very racist ideas from the beginning. Until those sorts of things are actually honestly talked about, addressed, understood by the broader public and actually embraced educationally, we're not going to stop these ongoing little fascist or, you know, Nazi groups getting together and organising, because we're creating a space where they can thrive.
Celeste, one form of racism that has come to public attention in recent years is anti-Semitism. And it's not uncommon for that label to be applied to rallies like those that are taking place every weekend in solidarity with Palestine. I thought it was somewhat, well, one could say it was ironic that on August 31st you had a Palestine solidarity rally on one side and on the other a group of neo-Nazis leading a group of Australian nationalists, and yet in the subsequent commentary, it seems for some, at least, the quite virulent expression of anti-Semitism that the neo-Nazis represent has been either downplayed or not paid sufficient attention to. I'm wondering if you have any comments about how particular forms of racism are elevated at one point or another and how you approach those sorts of questions, especially in the context of solidarity with the Palestinian people.
Yeah, and it was really fascinating to me, you know, a couple of days down the track from where you were talking, to see the rally at Bondi and see that there were Israeli flags in amongst the bunch of, you know, Australian flags on the Australian nationalist side of, like, it's sort of the way that we're seeing anti-Semitism wielded at this point in time seems very specifically to shut down what is a bunch of Palestinian activism. It's actually, for many reasons, it's been quite fascinating for me to watch unfold and also to see some of the, I don't know, the synaptic misfires that are going on, where you're seeing people with Israeli flags turning up on the same side of the barricades as white nationalists promoting that cause. Yeah, when you know, only a couple of generations ago we had the Holocaust and all of that. Anti-Semitism is a real problem in Australian society. It has been for an incredibly long time. And, you know, I've even argued at points that Australia's support of Israel in the first place is actually based in anti-Semitism, because at the same time that Australia was involved in the party of the UN that drafted the partition and so forth, there was the Kimberley Plan that was drawn up, which gave an alternate sort of solution to what was going to happen with a lot of displaced Jewish people following World War II. And the Australian government squashed that a couple of times because they didn't want Jewish people coming to this country, moving into the cities and changing the culture, which is noted in the Hansard. So Australia's support of the Israeli state has actually been based in anti-Semitism, and it is a real problem. But how it's being wielded at this point in time, it just seems that it does exist in order to shut down all criticism of the Israeli state, Australia's partnerships with that state and our trade relations and everything else. And it isn't actually based on ensuring that Jewish people aren't persecuted. It's based on ensuring that Palestinian activists are questioned and effectively silenced.
Celeste, at the conclusion of the March for Australia in Melbourne, there was allegedly a confrontation at the Camp Sovereignty site between members of the NSN and the people there. I've seen this described in some media in sort of gotcha terms, like, did they not even realise at their anti-immigration rally that Indigenous people have been here for for so much longer? that these aren't immigrants. It was really quite bewildering the way this gotcha yeah. was presented. I was wondering what your thoughts were on it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I understand their point with the gotcha because ultimately what that action, what the Nazis deciding that they were going to storm camp sovereignty immediately proves is that this wasn't a rally against immigration. It was actually against race. They went and attacked a site where, you know, there has been ongoing protests for Aboriginal people. Indeed, going, you know, the camp sovereignty site as a protest ground goes back to the Melbourne Commonwealth Games and the Black GST protests. So it's a protest site, but it's also a sacred site. It is where a bunch of returned remains that were stolen by colonizers and sent to museums across the world have been, you know, have been finally laid to rest. On the day, I just felt that because of how emboldened the Nazis were, they decided that this was their next point of target. And the gotcha moment doesn't really suit it because it, you know, ultimately what we should be looking at is the fact that they were so emboldened and so racist that they decided to allegedly commit act of violence against, you know, against a group that they were allegedly, you know, not supposed to be protesting in the first place. They don't want non-white people in this country. That's what their action on that day proved to me.
Celeste, we have had this event on August 31st that's had some implications for some of those who led that event. But obviously the sentiment upon which Nazis and others draw upon in order to build their movements and organisation, those continue. Outside of, I guess, mobilising in order to attempt to disrupt these sorts of events, what do you think people who are alarmed by what's occurred might do in order to better prepare themselves for, I guess, fighting back against these currents?
So there are a number of things, and I have seen the argument that people do need to know how to protect themselves a bit better. Yeah, I take that on board, but I think more than anything, we need the building of movements, you know, the union movement, the anti-racism movement, yeah, the feminist movement, whichever other movements can actually stand in solidarity to pull together as much as they possibly can and organise so that we've got clear tactics in order to stop these sorts of gatherings, these gatherings that are ostensibly organised by Nazis to get mainstream support for their projects. Yeah, the building of the collective and ensuring that there's clear targets and people trained in order to take action against their mobilizations of these groups is incredibly important. We can't end up fragmented or all over the place like we did on the 31st, because all that does is leave certain people vulnerable, and particularly people who are already socially marginalized. But there's also a bunch of, like, you folks asked me about my earlier article and my argument that Australia has played a role in ensuring that these groups survive for generations just due to the sheer amount of ignorance that's perpetuated in our systems, in our structures, in everything else. Like, there's actually roles that, you know, if politicians are really alarmed by this, or if unions are really alarmed by seeing a mounting neo-Nazi movement that's gaining mainstream support, they can actually work a bit harder to educate members, to grow the collective, to ensure that people know why it is that they need to be standing against these fascists. Yeah, we do need to build. We do need to make sure that there's collaboration across the movements. I know that there has been a fair bit of work that's been done in the last couple of weeks, actually, to ensure that moving forward that is the case. But we can never cede the streets to neo-Nazis. We can never do that. The the minute that we do continue to lose.
Well, this Saturday, listeners have their a wealth of choices available to them for which rally they want to attend. There is a calf rally at 11 a.m. from Flinders Street that I believe is possibly going to go up to Parliament. Then at Parliament at 12, there is a cooker rally as well as a nationalist rally, both being held at the same time and both supposedly competing against each other. I also see Victoria Police says there's a fourth faction planning a rally at the same time, but I don't know who that is.
Oh, God.
Maybe that's them, Kent.
Should people be getting out to protest on Saturday?
Yeah, I think everyone who's available should be getting out to protest. We need help in taking these streets, in stopping these people having free rein to just move through our city and perpetrate their vile ideology, normalizing them over and over again to people who are looking for answers. We need to oppose them. We need to educate those who don't necessarily know why we need to oppose them, and we need to stand strong and together. So I do recommend that people get out there, and I do recommend that people talk to other people about getting out there and why it's so damn important. Yeah, they never have free rein through our cities.
Well, Celeste, we will leave it there. If people want to find you online, your blog is at blackfeministranter.blogspot.com, and people can find your podcast, The Radical Online Leftist Pipeline Podcast. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. It's just, yeah, awesome to be here.
Well, Andy, that's our program. We'll be back next week. See you later.
We will. Bye.
What's taking place in Palestine is horrendous.
Here are some ways that you can keep yourself informed and involved.
Listen in to Palestine Remembered every Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. or listen to the podcast.
Join the APAN mailing list at apan.org.au for updates, news about actions you can get involved in, and where you can donate to provide humanitarian assistance.
Listen to other news and current affairs programs on 3CR that also cover Palestine.
The oppression of the Palestinian people has been going on for 75 years. It has to stop. You can be part of making that happen by staying informed and active.
APAN is a proud supporter of 3CR.
Have you heard about the news that's come out of the NT?
What news? Fires, floods, chicken flu, what?
No, the payouts.
Payouts?
Compensation for what you went through.
No.
Well, I reckon you should go for it. You deserve every cent and more. I'll back you. You know it.
Oh, sis, you're the best.
Yes, I am.
If you are Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander and were removed from family or community in the Northern Territory before 1 July 1978 or in the ACT or Jervis Bay before 11th of May 1989, you may be eligible for the Territory Stolen Generations Redress Scheme. If you know of a family member who was removed but passed away after the scheme was announced on the 5th of August 2001, you may be eligible to apply for redress for them. Call Link Up Victoria, VACA, on 037 002 3700 and leave a message for a callback or contact the Territory Stolen Generations Redress Scheme on 1800 566 111.
A 3CR supporter.
You might have heard about the Community Radio Plus app, but it's only when you start using it that you'll wonder how you lived without it.
You can listen to us wherever you are. At home, work, driving.
On public transport, gardening, protesting, or even in the bath.
Just search Community Radio Plus wherever you get your apps.